Support for KQED Podcasts comes from Star One Credit Union, now offering real-time money movement with Instant Pay. Make transfers and payments instantly between financial institutions. Online or through Star One's mobile app, Star One Credit Union, in your best interest. Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
Walk into just about any high school in California and you'll probably find a display case or maybe a closet full of old pictures, banners, news clippings, memorabilia of the school's history. I know my high school in LA has an archive like this, and so does John F. Kennedy High School in South Richmond.
I have most everything that's left of the past somewhere.
That's Mike Peretz. He's retired from teaching at Kennedy, but he's still here, rummaging through this archive room. He's looking for trophies that are markers of a better time for this school, the place he taught for his entire career.
A lot of things have disappeared.
He finds dozens of old, dusty, sometimes broken trophies, awards for both athletics and academics.
All of the memorabilia has been moved around, and much of it's already lost.
This school isn't winning many awards these days, but it used to be a paragon of excellence. I'm Sasha Coca, and this is the California Report magazine. Today, we visit Kennedy High School because what happened there is a familiar tale for many schools across California. Reporter Richard Gonzalez brings us the story of one retired teacher and his extraordinary commitment to the school where he's dedicated his time and energy for more than 50 years.
Mike Peretz is 79 years old, and he still talks with the enthusiasm and optimism he had as a rookie teacher on the founding faculty of Kennedy High in Richmond back in 1967. In all of those years of teaching, Mike says he never had a bad day.
I always had a good time, and I tried to make sure that everybody else had a good time. I still believe that that enhances learning.
For 35 years, Mike taught English, social sciences, and a vocational education program focused on food services training. He retired in 2001, but he still wasn't finished with the school or the West Contra Costa School District.
After I retired, I went back to work for the district as a teacher on special assignment, so I would help struggling teachers.
You might say Mike couldn't get enough of Kennedy High. He isn't working anymore, or I should say he isn't paid anymore, but he's still here at the school several times a week as a volunteer, mentor, advocate, educational guru, and fundraiser. I catch up with Mike one morning in the welding class at Kennedy High School. Teacher Ben Carpenter calls for the attention of his 20-odd students.
We got a lot going on today. We are preparing for the weld tests.
It's a mock test, really.
If you want to do one, it's not mandatory.
Carpenter has arranged for a certified welding inspector to come in to give these students, mostly sophomores and juniors, a taste of real-world supervision. Within a few minutes, the shop is buzzing as each student measures, cuts, hammers, and grinds small plates of metal to prepare for a basic weld. Sparks are flying, and frankly, Carpenter has his hands full keeping track of it all. But luckily, he's got another set of eyes and ears in the room. Mike Peretz is quietly and carefully scanning the shop.
Well, I have to be vigilant. He's asked me to keep an eye on things while he's in the booth.
Kennedy has a core of dedicated teachers who students rely on, but for years, the school has struggled to attract students and retain teachers. Mike sees this welding class as the beginning of Kennedy High's rebirth.
A lot of hope again coming back. And hope disappeared for a while. I think hope was an important element of Kennedy High School for a few decades, and then it went away. And COVID hasn't helped.
COVID wrecked teaching plans all over California, and now Kennedy High, like every school across the state, is trying to get back on its feet. The school, situated in this working-class town northeast of San Francisco, faces many of the challenges confronting public education in California. The students are poor. Roughly half are English language learners. Inexperienced teachers cycle in and out. But it wasn't always this way. I know because I graduated from Kennedy High more than 50 years ago, when families from all over the district clamored to get into it. Racial integration was the name of the game in those days, and my classmates came from every economic background you can imagine. The kids of professors joined the kids of pipefitters, all coming together at Kennedy High in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Eddie Wright graduated from Kennedy in 1974.
Kennedy was vibrant. It was exciting. Very, very diverse. There were a lot of people from a lot of different places going to the school at the time. And we had Latinos, we had blacks, we had whites, we had Asians as well. And from my perspective, it seemed like everybody got along.
I've often thought about those years as a special moment in history. And I know I'm not alone.
We felt, coming through high school in the late 70s, you know, after the 60s, we felt we were living what the 60s had been all about in terms of the struggle for civil rights. I'm Joni Hiramoto. I was a Kennedy High School graduate in 1979, and I was part of the experiment. You know, they bused the white kids and Asian kids from the hills down into Kennedy High School.
That meant that some of the wealthiest kids in the district voluntarily took a bus to attend school with some of the poorest. Kennedy had it all. AP courses, music, drama, science, competitive athletics in virtually every sport, and outstanding vocational education programs.
Today, people are spending $50,000 or $60,000 to send their kids to schools that offer some of what we had available to us.
Another alum, Richard Mitchell, from the class of 1969.
The clubs, the science enhancement programs, the art, the music, the gymnastics, all of these things that now you find at only the fanciest private schools.
This was a time when local and state governments spent more money on public education, and it was common for high schools around the state to have programs like these. Enrollment was booming, so the district built a brand new facility for Kennedy. It looked like a college campus and boasted a flexible schedule that encouraged us to use our free time wisely and take responsibility for our own learning. And Kennedy had some very good teachers, like David Dansky.
I will say that we astonished many people by winning the entire California State Speech Championships 3 years.
Dansky is a hero to many Kennedy families from this era. By the time he retired in 1988, Kennedy High had a nationally ranked speech and debate program. That success opened a lot of doors for Kennedy students. It proved that an inner-city public high school integrated by race and class could succeed. One teacher in particular, Mike Peretz, who we met earlier keeping an eye on the welding class, made it his mission to recognize the strengths in every kid, something he's still doing. Students today aren't quite sure what to make of this gray-haired old man they see on campus wearing a red cap featuring the school's eagle mascot.
I know that Mike is very passionate about Kennedy.
Senior Olinda Figueredo says she sees Mike on campus most days of the week.
He's like a white older man, so I think a lot of students see him and are confused on who he is. And like students are here like, why are you here? Like, why would you come here when we don't even want to be here sometimes, you know?
But others, like junior Jonathan Long and sophomore Cherish Starks, are glad he hangs around.
He's a good person to talk to, especially about the future.
It shows us as students, if we really pay attention, on how he really cares about us, you know, our education and what we need to upgrade. He's very on this. He's very serious about it.
But I didn't meet any students who know his history and why he's so committed to Kennedy High. Mike grew up in Alabama, where his family of Jewish entrepreneurs supported the struggle for civil rights. He was in college in 1963 at a pivotal point in history.
18 days after the March on Washington.
I finished my freshman year at Auburn University. And I decided, I think the deciding factor was when the church was blown up in Birmingham.
A bomb exploded in the 16th Street Baptist Church just before a Sunday morning service. 15 people were injured. 4 children were killed.
I came back to my apartment in Auburn, Alabama, to hear my roommates cheering. I didn't know what it was all about, and they were cheering because the church had been blown up. And the little girls had been killed.
Mike soon decided his life in Alabama was over. His family had already moved to California, and he decided to join them. When he arrived in the early 60s, the Bay Area was a hotbed of social change, and Mike jumped right in.
I just got here in time for the free speech movement. You know, I used to play basketball with the Black Panthers. I would say that it was a very hopeful time.
He got a teaching internship in Richmond.
Somehow they sensed I had a potential. It wasn't my grades. It wasn't my athleticism. It wasn't my good looks. It was my luck.
The teaching job paid well, and it kept him out of the draft and Vietnam. But he didn't have much experience teaching.
And one day they say, you know, we're going to build this new high school, and we want you to go meet the guy who's going to be the principal.
The new school was to be named for Mike's hero, the young president assassinated just 4 years earlier. The principal had assembled a roster of talented veteran faculty, along with newbies like Mike. It was a golden opportunity.
Everything seemed possible. Everything seemed hopeful.
Mike taught English, and he helped develop a vocational education program called FEAST.
So in 1968, FEAST stood for Food Education and Service Training.
The FEAST program was supported by federal and local grants, and get this, Kennedy High School was built with a 24-seat restaurant laid out in a classroom with a specially designed kitchen.
The kitchen that we developed was not a house kitchen, and it wasn't a commercial kitchen. It was a teaching kitchen.
Mike taught students the details of planning, cooking and serving meals, preparing and writing menus, shopping, shipping, sanitation, business English, as well as accounting.
We were so successful with our training program that by 1975, 100% of my senior students had some kind of a job before they went out into the world, so somewhere in the end of their senior year.
My name is Dennis Ray Allen, and I am a owner of Ray's Southern Foods here in Atlanta, Georgia. I was at Kennedy High School from 1973 to 76.
Dennis says his catering company serves everything from small family gatherings to large corporate events.
FEAST was the foundation of what I'm doing today. It always comes up in the conversation because people always ask, you know, how did you get started in the food business? And I have to talk about FEAST. You know, it's part of me. It's part of my history. It's part of my story.
The Kennedy High program soon became a model for FEAST programs across the country.
Well, we were nationally recognized in the sense that as FEAST programs grew, they were told, well, you have to get to California and go see the one at Kennedy High School.
So from the late 1960s to the late 1980s, Kennedy High was a model of innovation.
Everything that was there had a certain creativity, a certain flexibility, a certain intention.
But that period of optimism and innovation would not last. Slowly, social changes in California chipped away at the foundation of Kennedy High.
I described it as an erosion. Nobody's been able to stop the erosion. A little bit slips away at a time, and then a little bit more and a little bit more.
Starting in the late 1970s, a series of cascading events over a decade slowly changed Kennedy High, and not for the better. First came California's taxpayer revolt.
California voters said that resoundingly yesterday in voting almost 2-1 to drastically cut property taxes.
That's Walter Cronkite announcing the passage of Prop 13 in June 1978. The measure cut property taxes and upended public education finances all over California. For Kennedy High, that meant the first in a long series of teacher cutbacks. And that voluntary busing program that brought students in from affluent hillside neighborhoods, well, that was eliminated too. Soon, another economic earthquake.
Good evening. Here's what's happening. There's big labor troubles as we start the big Labor Day weekend.
A loss of manufacturing jobs that sustain the working class, including Black and Latino families.
The melt shop, the rolling mill, and the huge scrapyard that's been a familiar sight here in the East Bay were all closed with practically no warning or notice.
And finally, a new epidemic whipped like a tornado through neighborhoods like South Richmond.
Smokable cocaine, otherwise known as crack.
President Ronald Reagan in September 1986.
It is an explosively destructive and often lethal substance which is crushing its users. It is an uncontrolled fire.
And it made the area around Kennedy High a lot less safe. By the beginning of the 1990s, the school looked nothing like it had when I went there. Student enrollment declined as the last of the baby boom kids graduated. More affluent parents, often white, started keeping their kids out of the school, according to the local newspaper.
Almost 100 students who live in the area served by Kennedy High have permits to attend El Cerrito High, despite strict district regulations limiting the number of students who can move from school to school.
The district didn't want to lose those students entirely, so it allowed the exodus.
One parent said other parents pull their families out of Kennedy High because they don't like the racial makeup of the school.
A group of teachers responded with a public letter encouraging parents not to give up on the school. Mike Peretz reads from an old dog-eared copy.
Dear parents, we are writing this letter because of our pride in all the good things that happen at Kennedy High School and because we realize that for some there is a gap between the myth and the reality about our school.
In 1987, they still hoped they could save what they had built. Mike's eyes glisten as he reads.
This year, we were delighted that 5 Kennedy students have been accepted to Stanford, 3 to Harvard, 3 to MIT, many to Cal and others to Princeton, Cornell, Yale, UCLA, et al. We submit to the parents in our boundaries that if positive learning were not taking place at JFK right now, the successes in educating our college bound would not have happened. Stanford and Harvard and their ilk demand performance, not myths.
But that plea didn't work. Meanwhile, the school district itself made some bad decisions that eventually led to bankruptcy and a takeover by the state in 1991. Kennedy High School in Richmond never really recovered. The speech and debate program, gone. The feast program, shut down.
When you realized Kennedy was no longer the Kennedy of old, what went through your mind? What were you feeling then?
Well, I still knew that my children were going to go to school here.
Mike and his wife Ruth sent their 2 daughters to Kennedy, knowing, in his words, there was decline around the edges. And he remained as committed to making the school work as ever before.
I've never given up. I'm kind of a guy who sticks with things and tries to make them as good as they can be, no matter what's going on externally.
So even in retirement, and long after his own daughters had graduated, Mike co-created a foundation to raise money for Kennedy and its feeder schools. The foundation later folded into a college scholarship program for needy students all over Richmond. Around 2010, when the school was scheduled for closure, Mike led a community campaign to keep it open. Later, he led an effort to restore the music program at Kennedy. These days, Mike is trying to help the school focus on vocational education. It's about creating pathways for students to get a good-paying job right out of high school, like in welding, carpentry, IT, and health services. Remember, this is Mike's expertise, and he's eager to share it.
So Mike is a character.
Just ask the welding teacher, Ben Carpenter.
I don't think I've ever seen anyone as dedicated to anything as this guy is to this school and this community and these students.
Carpenter started teaching in 2019 after the longtime welding teacher passed away. The program was in jeopardy, a big problem because welding, along with a new makerspace, is finally getting kids excited to be at school again. Carpenter had never taught in public schools before, but he applied for the job anyway.
And this old guy comes up to me and he says, "Hey, I'm taking this math class so that I can help your students with the math." And I kind of looked at him, I kind of tilted my head like a dog, like, what? What?
You guessed it, Mike Peretz again.
He said, basically, I'm working for you. You tell me what you need. And I said, I like this guy. I would say, hey, here's an idea. And he would look at me and smile, pull out his flip phone and make a call. And he was on it within seconds, which is astounding to me.
And eventually, Carpenter would learn something else. It was Mike who led the effort to get him hired and save the welding program.
I've really come to understand how connected and how resourceful and just how generous this guy is.
Little by little, Kennedy High's welding program is gaining traction. 2 years ago, Carpenter won a national prize for outstanding instruction in the skilled trades.
He's just the right guy for the moment. He's quite incredible.
It's as if Mike sees himself in Carpenter, someone who is just as dedicated as he is to these kids at Kennedy High. And the welding class reminds him of the success his food services class had more than 25 years ago. To Mike, welding is a building block to make Kennedy once again a destination school.
I've seen it right. Once you've seen it right, you know it can happen again.
That's the vision that keeps Mike Peretz here, despite all the obstacles he knows the school faces.
I know that if you keep pounding on your arm, you know, your skin gets thicker after a while. So maybe I've just got a thicker skin than most people. I hang with it because we had a mission when we came here, and I'm still flying that mission.
I recently attended my 50th high school reunion.
First and foremost, I'd like to thank everybody for coming. The class of 1972 of Chinatown High School.
And nearly half of my classmates made the effort to come back, even from places all across the country, because they love and appreciate Kennedy High as much as I do. The school, we remember, was a model of integration with passionate students and teachers, parents ready with time, money, and resources to support us. It felt like a special time in education. But getting to know Mike Peretz reminds me of all the dedicated teachers across the state, working long hours because they love the kids and schools where they work. Kennedy High will never be exactly what my classmates and I remember, and that's okay. The students and teachers here will make it what they need it to be. But that doesn't mean they can't learn from old-timers like Mike Peretz. For the California Report, I'm Richard Gonzalez in Richmond.
The trailblazing model kitchen at Kennedy High may have closed its doors, but there's a community college in Los Angeles that's built a reputation as one of the strongest culinary training programs in the state, Los Angeles Trade Technical College. Jackie Orchard, who covers community colleges for LAist, stopped by to bake bread with one of their baking classes and find out what it takes to become a chef in LA.
Community colleges are normally known for offering an associate's degree at an affordable rate. Sometimes they also have strong specialties in nursing, auto mechanics, or cosmetology. And sometimes they have a gigantic two-story building with six gleaming kitchen labs and a student-run restaurant.
The roofing cap, make sure it is well-wrapped and well-labeled, so it has your name and French bread, all kind of fun stuff. Wait for it to double up in size. That's probably going to take about 45 minutes.
At LATTC, the Culinary Arts Pathway Program, comprised of culinary arts, professional baking, and restaurant management, is the pride and joy of the campus. The oldest program of its kind in the country, this community college sends students to national and local competitions every year. Standing before me in the LATTC baking lab in a tall white chef's hat is chef instructor Colin True. He says the culinary program is meeting a demand.
And this industry in particular has had a real challenge ever since the pandemic of getting cooks to come back into the kitchen. So I think that there is more than enough positions out there.
The LATTC Culinary Arts Program graduates about 70 students per year and currently has over 400 students enrolled in its over 10 classes. True says the industry often involves a fair amount of pressure on newer chefs, but for some of his students, this work is nothing compared to what they were doing. Like 38-year-old Raul Ceballos, who enrolled in the program because...
Well, I want to open my own donut/bagel shop. And it's about it, just be my own boss, you know?
I just got tired of working at warehouses and, you know, just want to work for myself.
Ceballos went back to high school and completed his degree in 6 months. Then he enrolled at LATTC to get on a new career track.
Just do it, you know, like just if you're thinking about getting a career, you're never too old, you know, just go for it, man. Just if you want to do something, do it.
Nearby, pouring over a baguette recipe, is another student, Veronica Hendricks. Hendricks recently retired from a 28-year career working for the city of LA as an emergency manager. LATTC enrollment costs about $50 per unit, which Hendricks says makes it easy to pursue a passion, whether or not it becomes a career.
It brings people a lot of joy, and also food can be very disarming. If you're having a conflict with somebody, you sit down and break bread, you know, barriers get broken too.
That story came to us from LAist reporter Jackie Orchard. Coming up next week on the California Report magazine, the story of a woman's struggle to find health care in rural Nevada County. KQED's health correspondent April Demboski has this preview.
For years and years, Lori was told she couldn't have a baby. Doctors said with her health history, it would be next to impossible. So Lori put it out of her mind. Then when she was least expecting it, she got pregnant.
I had this moment where I was like, this is a little miracle, baby.
Lori and her boyfriend decided to go for it. They were living a dream life in Grass Valley, a house on a farm with chickens and turkeys and goats. To them, a perfect place to raise a kid.
I was seeking sort of a peaceful, calming, healing life experience up there. It ended up being a bit different than what I'd anticipated.
About 2 months into her pregnancy, something didn't feel right. Lori had terrible pains in her abdomen, like doubled over, can't eat anything, can barely stand up kind of pain.
I had gone to the doctor in Grass Valley, and they assured me that the pain I was feeling was normal, and it was my uterus growing and getting ready for the baby, and cramping was normal.
But the pain got worse, and her belly was getting really big, like volleyball size, when she should have been in the modest grapefruit category. She went back to the clinic.
I felt like something's wrong, something they're not telling me. And they just kept telling me, just wait it out, it'll get better, just wait.
Over the next couple months, Lori saw three different doctors to try to figure out what was going on. When she started to suspect that the best thing for her health was to get an abortion, she had to drive 200 miles to get care. California has cast itself as an abortion haven, an abortion sanctuary. But that was not Lori's experience.
Tune in next week to hear April's story. It's got so many twists and turns and unexpected surprises, you don't want to miss it. And that's it for our show this week. The California Report magazine is a production of KQED in San Francisco. Our interim senior editor is Katrina Schwartz. Susie Racho is our producer-director. Our sound engineer is Brendan Willard, and Jessica Carissa is our intern. And I'm Sasha Coca. Thanks for listening. This is the California Report magazine, your state, your stories.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.